what all the different flavors of that are.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it's such an interesting, it really is one of those things that, like, it's something unique that is made possible by recording the live event.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes that gets edited out, I would think, too. And so
a lot of the time. Yeah.
Or even so just shifted or altered.
This is John Cargo from the town of Caro, New York. I'm the president of the Caro Historical Society, and you're listening to WGXC Acura 90.7 FM hands-on radio.
Every morning at 5 a.m., 7 a.m., and 9 a.m. for all the local news from the WGXC newsroom, from the Public News Service, from the River Newsroom's coronavirus report, to interviews from our partner station WOOC in Troy. You'll also hear the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate every morning on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, your place on the dial for local news.
Saturday, February 26th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. It's time to turn on the news, because they're storming the gates at Mar-a-Lago, apparently. At 11 a.m., the Dinzu artifacts are featured on the Radius Sketchpad show. Then at 3 p.m. on the Radio Art Hour, Anna Frizz and Emmanuel Madden take over with the Joy Channel. Then tune in from 4 to 6 for the WGXC Programming Awards for the year 2021, our annual event, Hear Who Got the Favorite Local Radio Show, and more. 6 p.m. it's time for the Framework Show, and 7 p.m. it's All Things Cage on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature. the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farms radio station WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Judd Malton of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Brian DeWine. I leave my clock radio tuned to 90.7 FM so that when it goes off in the morning, the first thing I hear is WGXC.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Local congressional representatives and their opponents who want to replace them in elections later this year weighed in on Twitter on Russia's invasion of Ukraine this week. On February 22nd, Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat who represents New York's 19th congressional district, tweeted, quote, "Russia's invasion of eastern Ukraine constitutes a grave violation of international law and is an affront to Ukraine's sovereignty. Together, our nation, NATO allies, and EU partners must hold Putin accountable," unquote. Mark Molinaro, the Republican who wants to unseat Delgado, took the war as a chance to criticize the congressperson. On February 22nd, he tweeted, quote, "We have learned throughout history that silent appeasement from politicians like Antonio Delgado only leads to greater conflicts. We can do better. We must demand better from the Biden-Delgado administration," unquote. On February 24th, Paul Tonko, a Democrat representing the 20th congressional district, tweeted, quote, "I strongly condemn Vladimir Putin's unprovoked attack of Ukraine, which is in clear violation of international law. As President Biden has stated, we must quickly implement a powerful response to target Putin and his cronies with serious aggressive sanctions and continue coordinating with our allies to the fullest extent to uphold global peace," unquote. On the same day, Liz Joy, the Republican hoping to replace Tonko in Washington, D.C., called Putin's invasion, quote, "alarming and destructive," unquote. She made a rare break from former President Donald Trump by criticizing Putin and Russia, tweeting, quote, "These actions by Russia are making the world more volatile and must be stopped," unquote. Mid-Hudson News reports that Governor Kathy Hochul has still not decided if she will name a new Dutchess County sheriff. Former Sheriff Butch Anderson passed away in late 2021, and in his absence, Undersheriff Kirk Imperardi has been serving as the acting sheriff. But Hochul has been talking about appointing someone else until the November election. In Newburgh on February 23rd, Hochul said, quote, "Our team has been speaking to the local leadership, interviewing individuals, and trying to make the right decision with respect to that election. But we understand there is an opportunity to name an individual to fill the vacancy, but also there is another option of letting the process play out. We're working on it as we speak. We really are," unquote. And Parardi responded to that comment saying, quote, "I agree with the governor and I should remain in the position and let the voters of Dutchess County decide who the next sheriff is in November," unquote. Recently, though, Democrat Jillian Hanlon declared for the Democratic nomination to run against Imperati in November, so Hochul might appoint her to help her election chances. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Kathleen Moore reports in the Times Union that you might not believe this next news story. Jason Hall, the store manager at a Saratoga County butcher shop, did not believe the legal papers he was served with. Quote, "I had to actually call the Albany Federal Court Clerk's office to confirm it was legit," unquote, he said. The legal papers came because Howell is being sued in federal court for asking a customer to put on a mask in the midst of a deadly global pandemic. On December 17th, during a state mandate requiring people to wear masks indoors in public, David Quatt was asked to put on a mask in the butcher shop. Quote, "I said, do you have a mask?" He said, "No." I said, "I can provide you with a mask if you like," unquote, Howell said. Quote, "It was pretty non-confrontational," unquote. Quatt asked for his business card and left the store. Now Hal says he thinks the lawsuit was always the plan. Quote, he was looking for that, unquote, Hal said. Quat released a statement, quote, forcing healthy people to wear masks is illegal, immoral, ignorant, and criminal, unquote, Quat said in the statement. Quote, this fight is for those that can't stick up for themselves and has nothing to do with money and everything to do with our God-given rights, unquote. Hal guesses it might be about money. Quote, and I don't have $250,000, which is what he's asking for, unquote, Hal said. Quote, and he's pretty well off, unquote. Before and during the pandemic, stores have refused service to customers who do not wear shirts or shoes, and the state government mandated that store customers wear a mask as well. Hal doesn't have much of an opinion on the issue. Quote, I'm very indifferent, unquote, the butcher shop manager said. Quote, but I do have staff who have concerns, and I've lost staff over it. I had people who said, quote, I can't work on the front line anymore. I have an underlying health conditions, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union, and read more about these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Saturday should be mostly sunny, with a high near 28 and a low around 15. Sunday, there is a 30% chance of rain or snow showers between 1 and 4 p.m., then turning just to snow in the evening. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 37 and a low around 7. Monday should be sunny with a high of 21 and a low around 4. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Silent weapon technology has evolved from operations research, a strategic and tactical methodology developed under military management in England during World War II. The original purpose of operations research was to study the strategic and tactical problems of air and land defense with the objective of effective use of limited military resources against foreign enemies. It was soon recognized by those in positions of power that the same methods might be useful for totally controlling a society. Everything that is expected from an ordinary weapon is expected from a silent weapon by its creators, but only in its manner of functioning. It shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing instead of a chemical reaction, originating from bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder, from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. The silent weapon makes no obvious explosive noises, causes no obvious physical or mental injuries, and does not obviously interfere with anyone's daily social life. Yet, it makes an unmistakable noise, causes unmistakable physical and mental damage, and unmistakably interferes with daily social life, i.e., unmistakable to a trained observer one who knows what to look for. The public cannot comprehend this weapon, and therefore cannot believe that they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but because of the technical nature of the silent weapon, they cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help and do not know how to associate with others to defend themselves. When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts, adapts to its presence, and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives until the pressure, psychological via economic, becomes too great and they crack up. Therefore, the silent weapon is a type of biological warfare. It attacks the vitality, options, and mobilities of the individuals of a society by knowing, understanding, manipulating, and attacking their sources of natural and social energy and their physical, mental, and emotional strengths and weaknesses. Repetition breeds suggestibility. Repetition breeds suggestibility. I am not suggestible. I am not suggestible. I am not open to suggestion. Repetition breeds suggestibility. I am not open to suggestion.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
New York Times reports that on May 31st, a federal judge ruled that the sound, the long-range acoustic devices used by New York City police against protesters emit a form of force. In effect, Judge Robert Sweet of the Federal District Court in Manhattan ruled that the LRADs are weapons as well as communication devices. Police use them sometimes as loudspeakers to make announcements to protesters. But at 1 a.m. on December 5th, 2014, the police used a 100X long-range acoustic device to make a series of sharp, piercing beeps directed at the Black Lives Matter protest in Manhattan. Here's a recording a protester made that night.
Once again, this is the New York City Police Department. You must remain on the sidewalk. You must not interfere with vehicular traffic. If you do, you'll be placed into custody.
I'm still here. They didn't do a damn thing. Yeah, looking right at you.
Once again, the City of New York City Police Department. You must not interfere with vehicular traffic. If you do, you'll be placed into custody. You must remain on the sidewalk.
Use of the device, quote, as a projector of powerfully amplified sound is no different than other tools in law enforcement's arsenal that have the potential to be used either safely or harmfully, one example being distraction devices, items like stun grenade, flashbang, or concussion grenades, unquote, Judge Robert Sweet of Federal District Court in Manhattan wrote, adding, quote, can be plausibly inferred that the use of a high-powered sound magnifier in close proximity to plaintiffs was not appropriate, unquote. The judge did agree with New York City's lawyers that the use of the device did not violate First and Fourth Amendment rights. Instead, the judge said that protesters had a, quote, cognizable claim, unquote, that the excessive use of force violated their 14th Amendment rights, so their suit against the city and two members of the police department's disorder control unit will continue. I'm Tom Rowe for Wayfarm Radio and WGXC.
Hey there. I am kind of rushing to get this video recorded, edited, and uploaded as soon as possible, and the reason why will soon be obvious, but let's get some pertinent things first. I have a lot of hypersonic sound devices. Some are consumer-grade ones, some others of which are a little more powerful than consumer-grade ones and potentially more dangerous. But the reason why I have these is because I think that audio lasers are super fascinating, even just from a physics perspective. I just barely understand how it works, and I am not formally educated in physics or mathematics, so it's going to take me a little bit of creativity and time to figure out a way to explain it in a video where I'm 100% confident that I am being scientifically sound. But one day I'm going to go way deeper into this, and I'm going to experiment with this technology in a way that is a lot less depressing than helping my fellow American citizens avoid permanent hearing loss or physical pain or even physical damage as a result of sonic weapons. So sorry for the spoiler, but this is the conclusion and the most pertinent information in this video. If you are trying to protect yourself from long-range acoustic devices or sonic weapons, the best way that I have found thus far is by holding a piece of paper, the larger the better, or a thin piece of cardboard, the glossier the better, between you and the sonic weapon. For example, if this camera is that LRAD device, I'm going to hold this paper tightly like this and then use it as a barrier between my head and the LRAD device, like so. Out of all the things I tried, from cloth to high-end acoustic diffusers to reflectors or deflectors, the best result I could find was with glossy paper or light cardboard that was glossy. And it doesn't have to be glossy, but the glossiness seems to help. And I have no idea why. You would think that a 20-pound, 3-inch thick sheet of acoustic foam would work better than this, but it doesn't. Another really important thing, LRADs or long-range acoustic devices or sonic weapons are not safe. I am not encouraging you to stand around with paper in front of your face and wait for the batteries to run out, but the information you just heard should help you minimize the damage you take while you move to a safer place. Now, if you want to watch me torture myself with sonic weapons to come to this conclusion, feel free to watch the rest of this video. So right off the bat, I just wanted to say that if for some reason you think that I shouldn't be helping protesters protect themselves from non-lethal weapons, I don't care. So again, I am really rushing through this, and I intend on making a much more educational, entertaining, and fun version of this video in the future. So LRAD, or long-range acoustic devices, also have kind of a variety of names that all pertain to the same group of patents, and some of them are like hypersound, hypersonic sound, ultrasonic sound, sound cannon, sound lasers. But what they all have in common is that they transmit sound like a laser rather than like a light bulb. So if my studio monitor back there, that would be like a light bulb. It sort of transmits waves all around the room. This guy, on the other hand, transmits waves direct, like I was shining a laser at somebody. From what I can find in the last few days, Phoenix, New York, Columbus, Ohio, Denver, Greensboro, and Charleston, North Carolina are using LRADs for crowd control. There's probably a lot more places that are using LRADs for crowd control, but the media doesn't seem to pick up on it as much as it does tear gas or rubber bullets. I think that the media and protesters both don't seem to think that LRADs are as dangerous in comparison, but they f- The LRADs used in crowd control go up to 160 decibels, and to give you an accurate comparison of what it's like to have 160 decibels targeted at you from a hypersonic transmitter, it would be like if you had a friend grab a shotgun and put the nozzle up next to your ear and fire it. The reason they chose the maximum power limit of 160 decibels is not a coincidence. Typically around 150 decibels is where your eardrum just breaks. And that's like instantly breaking it. Anything over 120 decibels for more than 8 seconds causes permanent hearing damage. So I guess depending on how much you value your hearing, I would actually say that sonic weapons are probably more dangerous than most other non-lethal crowd control methods. So quickly, a really brief look at how hypersonic sound works. The principles behind hypersonic sound are really, really complicated because upon your initial impression, they contradict the way that we think sound or even just waves work. For example, higher frequencies take more energy to create and more energy to maintain. And this is one of the reasons, for example, why you will hear a rumbling truck in the distance, but you won't hear the squeak of its brakes. A common misconception is that because lower frequencies are spread out more, they travel farther. This is actually false. They both travel the same distance. However, everything that a higher frequency encounters acts as a deterrent. But all of this doesn't resonate, no pun intended, with how hypersonic sound works, because we're pushing frequencies way up into the ultrasound range and then somehow getting a long-range sound device. There's like a half dozen patents that pertain to this, and they all have slight variations, but this is the gist of them all. It turns out that when you push audio frequencies high enough, the molecules in the air become a non-linear medium that modulates and demodulates audio. So if this device were pointed at me, it would be as if it were a radio station antenna and my body were the radio. But what is impressive is that hypersonic sound, to make things even more precise, they have this massive array of smaller speakers. So the inner speakers will be this hypersonic modulated signal, and the outer speakers will actually be this exact same signal, but inverted. So check this out. I'm going to speak very softly into this boom mic, and then I'm going to turn the gain up after I'm done with this video, and that way you'll be able to hear a whole bunch of background noise. My name is Ben, and I have a dog named Lucy. So what I'm going to do next in a simple wave editor is I'm going to take a half second of that background noise. I'm going to invert the waveform, and then I'm going to paste it over that entire recording. My name is Ben, and I have a dog named Lucy. My name is Ben, and I have a dog named Lucy. This is exactly how noise-canceling headphones work, or if you've ever seen a movie being filmed, they'll usually make everybody be quiet and sample the room tone. That's so they could invert that waveform and remove the background noise for the overall scene. So again, we have your normal audible waveform, and that is being encoded with a signal somewhere up in the megahertz, and that is what's coming out of here on the positive side, and that's what's coming out of these side ones on the negative side. And this coats the signal with essentially noise reduction. So the wave dispersion of a normal speaker would be like this. The wave dispersion of a hypersonic sound speaker would be a lot more like this, because you have those inverted waveforms on the side doing their normal job of dispersion. There's so many fun and modern uses of this technology. However, unfortunately, today we have to concentrate on how to stop ultrasonic waves, since they're being used to harm human beings. I'm trying really, really hard to just stick to my zone and not go on a tangent, but one thing that's absolutely disgusted me is that a lot of these companies that are selling LRADs to police departments and cities are marketing them as extremely safe. If you live in a city in America, it's actually probable that your tax dollars have paid for some of these devices, and they are not cheap by a long shot. It's kind of hard to get your hands on the law enforcement manual for using these devices, but I've seen some of them, and the front few pages just bragging about how it's a very safe and effective crowd deterrent device, and then every page after that has a warning about how if you get in between the crowd and the device itself, you could cause yourself permanent physical damage, permanent hearing loss, all of these things. And it's just full of warnings. But the warning only applies to law enforcement or military, not the people that you're actually shooting the thing at. The human beings that they're using LRADs on do not understand how the technology works. The police officers or military personnel who are operating LRAD do not understand how the technology works. The mayors or governors or police chiefs who are using taxpayer money to pay for LRAD devices do not understand how this technology works. If you're a government employee or a police officer or you work in City Hall, anything, you need to go to your superiors and let them know that this is not safe to be using on your citizens. And you know what? Even if you don't care about your citizens, or if you're one of those people who just says, well, if they don't want to get hurt, don't protest, someone is going to figure out that this has caused hearing loss, and they're going to be able to prove it, and it's going to cost you millions of dollars in litigation. If you have an LRAD device that has a targeted amplification rating of higher than 90 decibels, you are hurting the people you are pointing it at, period.
On Wednesday, February 23rd, there was a Troy public safety meeting to get the new members of City Council in dialogue with both the police chief and the fire chief, among others. Prior to the meeting, there was a joint letter sent by the guest joining us today, Angela Beeler, to our City Council folks. And the letter was referenced a few times in the public safety meeting. Angela Beeler, why did you write that letter to City Council, and what points were you making?
I sent a joint letter with another community member just to follow up with the Public Safety Committee on a number of issues and concerns regarding the Troy Police Department. In August, early August of last year, there was a city council meeting in which a Homeland Security grant was voted upon and accepted unanimously by the council. And this was to acquire an LROD, a long-range acoustic device, which is a military-grade weapon. And Melanie Trimble of the New York Civil Liberties Union had at that time written an op-ed saying that the Troy Police Department does not need military-grade equipment. Anasha Cummings, who was on the city council at that time, raised some questions, tried to bring the dialogue, left it asking Detective Comitale to follow up and do some questioning with the manufacturer to see, for instance, if they could use a key function instead of a button function for the highest decibel of this, which the highest decibel is very damaging to human ears and has been used in protests for dispersal, but also to violently impact those on the streets' ears and their hearing. And there have been lawsuits, and there was a more recent one in New York City, there was one in Pittsburgh. And my concern and the concern of the co-writer, Michelle Temple, was that the technology is acquired and there is no policy surrounding the technology, and there's no public forum to discuss what it's like to acquire that technology and how is that technology used. And as you listen to the dialogue of that meeting on August 5th of 2021, we are supposed to trust that they will never use it at that decibel. Their only intention is to use it as, quote, a glorified bullhorn. And as long as they follow the policy that the chief sets out, then it will be okay. But there's no policy. And what we found out in writing that letter was that, yes, the LROD was purchased. We don't know if Detective Calmatelli followed up on those discussions with the manufacturers. In my mind, that's not the issue. It's having the LROD, period, that is the issue. But, you know, having that debate around how the technology works at least brings that out into the public about this. And so now we've learned, which there is no follow-up, that they purchased it, but they haven't acquired it yet.
So let's go to a clip of Chief DeWolf at Wednesday's public safety meeting discussing the LROD purchase.
Yeah, does it do these other things? Lots of things do other things. But if you use them the way you intend to use them, well, then you're not going to have a problem. So, I mean, you can go round and round about it. Well, it can do this, for sure. I mean, you could take a car and drive through a crowd of people, but the intention isn't to do that. It's to drive to work and go on vacation, right?
Right. Okay. Right.
That was Chief DeWolf talking about the purchase of the LROD being questioned based on your letter that you wrote. What we learned there, I know it's a bit hard to hear, is that there's an intended use for LRODs versus other uses. And he says that there will be policy. Was that a satisfactory answer for you? And if not, what else would you like to hear from the chief? And what follow-up on making the policy transparent would you like to know?
That wasn't satisfactory. It basically repeated the discussion that was had last August. This was put on the agenda that there's Homeland Security funding with no further information about it. We honestly found out after the fact because Melanie Trimble wrote this letter. They put it on the agenda not that long ahead of time. They don't give any information. So there's really no clear pathway for community engagement to talk about these things. To me, it's not enough that there's a promise of a policy. Technology should not guide the production of public policy. And if you listen to the dialogue that happened in that meeting, I appreciate that the council people shared the letter with each other. They printed it out. They shared it with the DeWolf. Apparently, they will be following up. But, you know, the line of questioning about lawsuits, about, you know, this could potentially bring lawsuits, that's not enough in my mind that you know, what does it mean to have military grade equipment? What does that open us up for? In that city council meeting in public safety, it's a yes operation there. Perfect, DeWolf. You told us that. Perfect. Oh, that's so great. Is this happening? Check that. Yes, we're with you. But what we need is a space for critical dialogue about how the police department is interfacing with the community of Troy. we don't want more lawsuits, but we don't want people's hearing to be damaged. We don't want more people to be killed and then, you know, be answered to with a $1.5 million settlement, as in the case of Edson Thevenin. You know, we want more transparency and openness to consider how the police exist in the community here.
Thank you for that, Angela Beeler. So also in your letter, you talk about body cams. As we now know, the Troy police are equipped with body cams. What, in terms of that dialogue and the questions that you brought up in your letter, do you feel are answered? And what do you feel like develops new questions for you in terms of how body camera use is being implemented in Troy, New York?
Yeah, the body cams have been on the table, I think, since around 2015. They now are equipped with them. We found out that they were actually operating out on the streets with them through an article by the Times Union Education Beat reporter, which to me raised alarms of questions about, you know, yes, how are these used in institutional settings? Are those who are unable to consent protected from the violation of potentially being videotaped? Beyond that, again, it's that the body cams are on the street, they're being used, and where is the public policy? Where do we get to see how these are used? Who holds the footage? How long is the footage held? How is it used in an incident when there is questions about police conduct or police misconduct? And who makes those decisions? You know, so what their response is that there is a policy, you know, it's in considerations between the police union and the police department, and so therefore is not available to the public yet. That is a problem. Video is not infallible. And what we've seen in other cases is that maybe video is provided, it is edited. What's the policy around that? Will you release full stream, you know, body cam footage if there is an incident that happens?
Let's go back to a clip from the public safety meeting of Chief DeWolf talking about body cameras. It starts with the chair of the Public Safety Committee, Kim Ash McPherson.
All our officers are all wearing those. We're not having any issues with body cams. The videos are working with them. Where we have the storage.
Yeah, so the storage is in the cloud. It's all through Amazon. It's a contract that we have with them. So the maintenance of and everything is taken care of through Axon, which is great. So if one of them goes down, there's one available. As far as uploading the videos, the officers were all trained on how to do that. And they can review. There's an app on their phone. So all the phones are city phones.
Okay.
They have to use that phone in order to have that app.
Okay.
And what's great about it too is that they can capture evidence on it. So where before you might have to wait for an evidence technician for a broken window or somebody slashed my tire or whatever, the officer is able to capture that on their body-worn camera and then upload that as evidence.
Okay.
So that was Chief DeWolf talking about how the body camera footage is being stored. If you couldn't quite hear it, the videos are uploaded. The officers do it through their city cell phones. Angela, your reaction.
The debates around body cams, you know, a lot of smart people have done a lot of thinking on this. Technology itself does not solve the problems of accountability. So having a policy that is shared with the public, that the public has the ability to respond to and to talk about how that process happens, I think is really crucial and important. And yes, you're wearing those out. What are the requirements for having them on? How are they turned on? When are they turned off? And then how is that footage shared? How does someone access that footage? And then is it editable? How do they commit to transparency through that?
So you wrote this letter with Michelle Temple before the public safety meeting. I bet you didn't imagine that it would be used as sort of the framework for the public safety meeting itself. But what does that say about citizen engagement?
We wrote this letter knowing that it was the first public safety meeting of this year. It was the first time that they've convened this meeting with the new city council members. So, you know, I understand that, but it also calls into question, like, what else is on their agenda? What happens when commitments are made in a meeting verbally? For instance, from Komitali, you know, and the other representatives of the police department in August of last year, where's the oversight? You know, where's the ways that we know how these things are being followed up on? You know, same thing. We had the discussion with the city council about encryption of the police communications. That was also in my letter. They didn't bring that up. There was a verbal commitment that we will look at this and come up with a policy around when and how and why we will encrypt. It's up to community members to hold them accountable to that, because they don't have a mechanism, it seems, to do that amongst themselves.
Military, if it needs to broadcast warnings or instructions to a swelling crowd. The machines are being tested at an airfield in a remote section of Brooklyn, along with other devices like handheld radiation detectors and mechanical barriers strong enough to stop a million vehicle construction. The FBI recently two. And they plan to mount them on armored vehicles posted outside Madison Square Garden. It would mark the first time these instruments, which can beam sounds up to 150 decibels for distances up to 300 yards, will be used by civilian force. Two possible uses may be directing crowds to safety following a terrorist attack or other calamity, or reminding protesters where they're allowed to march. Earlier this year, manufacturer American Technology Corporation of San Diego won a $1.1 million contract from the U.S. Marine Corps, which used these gadgets in Iraq. The military builds the long-range acoustic device as a non-lethal weapon, designed to disperse hostile crowds or ward off potential foreign combatants by delivering pre-recorded warnings in several languages, communicating important messages, and, if needed, a blast of ear-splitting feedback.
Let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
Attention, please. This is the Alberta Emergency Public Warning System. The following emergency bulletin may affect your area. Listen carefully. This emergency warning message has been broadcast for your safety. If your area is affected, take all necessary precautions and listen to any local radio, television, or cable outlet for further updates. Do not use your telephone for the duration of this emergency.
The space program made contact with. They are not what they claim to be. They have infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the government knows about them.
Online, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Hi. I don't have a whole lot of time.
Well, look. Let's begin by finding out whether you're using this line properly or not.
Area 51.
Yeah, that's right. Were you an employee or are you now?
A former employee.
Former employee.
I was let go on a medical discharge about a week ago, and I've kind of been running across the country. Oh man, I don't know where to start. They'll triangulate on this position really, really soon.
So you can't spend a lot of time on the phone. So give us something quick.
Okay. Okay. What we're thinking of as aliens are they're extra dimensional beings that an earlier precursor of the space program made contact with. They are not what they claim to be. They have infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the government knows about them, and there's a lot of safe areas in this world that they could begin moving the population to now, Art.
But they're not doing anything.
They are not. They want the major population centers wiped out so that the few that are left will be more easily controllable.
Discharge.
I started getting...
something knocked us off the air, and we're on a backup system now.
It's the government, or...
I don't know.
It has to be something, though.
Well, did you hear... Now, you tell me, because you were listening.
That was awful strange.
There was a really weird guy on the air when it went off?
Yeah. Real weird out.
Like, going... Sort of sounding paranoid, schizophrenic.
Like crying and everything.
Yeah. And how far into the conversation was it when it went off?
Just a couple, about 15, 20 seconds, I'd say.
Oh, you guys really missed the call then, and I've got a feeling somebody didn't want you to hear it.
Yeah. Because it was really strange. All of a sudden, I'm hearing Mark Furman, and
the network, of course, went immediately to a backup tape while we tried to figure out what blew up here.
Uh huh.
So that's what you heard happen.
Uh huh.
And then we're now on a backup link system.
Uh-huh.
To be on the air at all right now. So, well, I'm telling you.
Am I on the air right now?
You're on the air right now. Well, you better be, yes.
And,
where are you, by the way?
I'm in Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, I called the other night, and I wanted to ask two things.
Real quick.
Well, I wanted to say one thing, and I wanted to ask another.
Real quick.
I wanted to ask if you could play that remote viewing one when you were in, while you go to Egypt.
Yes.
And also, I wanted to know, all this stuff about, like, Area 51, if it's, like, the government's trying to put it out there like that, so, like, some other place isn't being watched as much.
In other words, it's a big decoy. I see what you're saying, Aaron. Apparently, we'll be back after the news, I think. Sandy Beach here, inviting. We lost all transmit capability on this end here in Nevada. The transmitter went belly up suddenly. For some unknown reason. I've never seen it do this in all the years that we've been on the air. I have never seen the transmitter in this way just simply fail, a massively fail, like a massive heart attack or some kind. And so we have gone to a backup system to get the signal to you right now, and I presume it is getting to you right now. Totally.